You're listening to Higher Ed Social, episode 32. I'm Jackie.
And I'm Logan. And this week we talk to Tom Southard, the director of the Wolfington Center at Cabrini College. First, we talk a lot about birthdays and zodiac signs, but we really get into the topics of civil engagement and social justice at Cabrini. They have a really cool program that encourages students to engage with the community through lobbying.
Well, of course it's through lobbying, because Tom was actually a lawyer, which is something that we don't talk about at all during the show, which is weird because it's really interesting. But we talk about educating students about what's going on in their community, in the world, in their state. But we also talk about some other interesting topics aside from civic engagement. We talk about faith-based campuses, as well as different podcasts actually aside from higher ed podcasts like Serial, which actually took place in Tom's hometown. So we hope you enjoy this episode of Higher Ed Social. You guys can see my ridiculous sunburn that I got today. Check it out.
Wow.
Yep.
Sunburn. It hurts really bad.
Yeah.
Really, really bad. No, I'm so red. It's insane.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
Anyway, welcome to the show, Tom. It's weird not being able to see you guys. I can't see. But welcome to the show.
Yay. Thank you.
You've been studying. This is your moment.
Yeah, I would like some theme music, though.
Oh.
Well, the theme music just ended. I guess. I don't know.
Okay. So there's your theme music. So why don't you introduce yourself to our listeners at home?
Sure. I'm Tom. Tom Southard. I work at Cabrini College. I run the Wolfington Center there, which is our center for civic engagement and Catholic social teaching. And I'm currently sitting in my basement because it's the only place with really reliable Wi-Fi. And two stories above me is my 11-week-old son, TJ.
Yay! I was waiting for that to come up, but I'm glad it happened so early.
Oh, I bring it up really early. Every conversation I can work it into.
Congratulations!
Thank you. I love that kid.
I hope so.
I hope you do, because you've got him for a while. So.
And my very thoughtful wife decided to make sure that we had him in May, which is the ideal time for higher ed professionals to have a child, I think.
That is true. Was it pre-graduation or post-graduation?
It was 3 days after graduation.
Oh my gosh.
He was actually born by C-section, and we were told we could pick the date. And the date they gave us that they recommended was the day before graduation. And I said, no, doesn't work that
way. I hope that TJ listens to this as a young adult and is like, wow, thanks, Dad.
Right. So I kept saying it to people at work, and they were like, oh, of course you would do it that way. And everybody else in the world was like, what the heck?
See, in the higher ed world, things that make sense don't make sense outside of the higher ed world.
That's absolutely true.
That's hilarious. Well, welcome to the world, TJ.
Yep.
Are you going to does he have like his real birthday, like the pre-graduation birthday, and then like the one that you forced him to have? Like, I bet you he's going to feel deprived of a birthday.
No, we're never going to mention that. Although I've always had this theory that since he's, you know, since he was born by C-section, he actually will never be born. He was just removed. So I don't know that he gets to celebrate a birthday.
That's
so
awful.
Removal day.
I was born by C-section in May as well. And I still have a birthday, so it's a nice time. Yeah. What is his birth date? What's the day?
May 21st.
Okay. Oh, he missed. I'm pretty sure he's not a Taurus. He's not like the rest of us.
I have no clue.
I think May 20th. I think it's April 20th to May 20th. The Taurus. The bull.
I stopped paying attention when they created that new one.
No, that was like a fluke. They stopped making it. They were like, wait, never mind, guys. Yeah, it went away. It was like a couple weeks. And they're like, no, never mind. Sorry, we screwed it up. Everybody, I think it's just because everybody got so freaked out that their zodiac was potentially changing. Because, you know, we all pay attention to the zodiac that deeply. And then I think everyone was like, never mind. Like, we're just not going to create this new one.
Some people do.
Pay attention to the zodiac?
Yes.
Oh, no, I know that people do. I didn't mean to make it sound like nobody does. But I think the number of people that like actually panicked about their zodiac changing is not indicative of the number of people that actually do deeply pay attention to their zodiac.
Perhaps.
Well, what while I think that's true, I think what it proved is that more people pay attention to it than was previously thought. And in fact, people who didn't pay attention to it suddenly realized they should pay attention to it.
That is true. I don't know, like, I don't really ever pay attention to my zodiac, ever. I don't, like, read. I mean, like, where am I supposed to be reading? Like, what's a reliable source to know?
The internet.
But I feel like the internet is also full of unreliable sources. Well, the newspaper, like...
Because like I said, the internet.
I don't... I mean, like, I don't know. I feel like there's so many sites that can just feed me fake stuff about my zodiac.
To be clear, you won't pay attention to your horoscope, but you will still... My guess is you know everything about being a Taurus.
I just know that I'm a, like, Taurus is a bull, and we're really stubborn, and that's pretty accurate to my lifestyle.
She's very stubborn.
Mm-hmm. I'm basically a brick wall.
Remember those 2 months that we were going to make a podcast that we didn't because you were too stubborn because you wanted to plan it? Yeah, I remember that.
But it worked out really well, and now we have Tom on the show! Da,
da, da, da, da. 32 weeks later.
It all works out. Yeah, we're like...
Congratulations, you're episode 32.
We're like knee deep in this now. We're like beyond ankle deep. Like we can still swim out if we want to. We're pretty deep now.
We're invested.
This is good. So how has your summer is probably pretty, well, probably not pretty chill considering you now have a child. But in terms of your campus, it's probably pretty calm.
It's actually been the opposite of calm.
Yeah, what? I was going to say, school's about to start.
Right, well, so, yeah, so- but like, it's the it's the calm before the storm.
No, there is no such thing.
Okay, never mind. So how crazy has your summer been?
So we're a year into a new president, which means there have been lots of changes. And at the same time, I just became the director in May. I was the interim director. Yeah, the interim director from November to May. I became the director in May. And it was an office that should be staffed with 5 people. And we were down to 1.5. So I spent the summer staffing up. So it's been a summer of hiring and interviewing, and now we're really excited to start for the fall.
That's good though.
I don't know that I accomplished anything, but I have.
But you have all your you have all your new people coming in at once. So that must be fun to like everybody starts new. Because sometimes when you just have one new person, it's tough to kind of get them to fold into like the culture and like how it works. But when you have all these new people, it's like
a whole new culture.
Yeah, let's figure it out. That's cool. Exciting.
New cultures are always fun.
Yeah, that's interesting. What types especially of projects? For biologist. Especially for what? New culture.
New culture.
That was funny. I was going to make a frozen yogurt joke, but I didn't, so I'm glad that you made a biology joke.
Oh, that would have been a good one.
Well done. Well done, you with the puns. What are your upcoming projects? You must have a ton lined up.
We actually do have a ton lined up.
Do you have
So we're starting an Institute for Catholic Social Justice, which is going to be kind of a national program with a journal attached to it that'll focus on social justice and how it's actually being lived out. And that's going to be kind of our national contribution to teaching. And at the same time, we have a very innovative curriculum called Justice Matters. All of our students are required to take 3 courses that connect them to the community. So we administer that. So 100% of our students will have what would be called service learning, but we consider them in community-based research and engagement. So that's a huge part of what we do. It's a lot of time, and it's really exciting.
That's really cool. Yeah. So are the students selecting those kind of their focus, or are you distributing them? How does that work?
Yeah, they get to select. So we have 100, 200, and 300 level, and each one has a different focus. So 100 level is our... How does a student fit into a community? What communities are they a part of? What does community mean? 200 level is the more traditional service learning. How do they improve an organization? And 300 level is where they go out and advocate for an organization. So they're each picking something they're interested in. So we have courses at the 200 level where they'll go and work at domestic violence shelters. They'll work at food kitchens. They'll work in education. They work in tutoring. It's really kind of exciting.
That's cool. That's an awesome opportunity. So you must have a pretty small campus then, if you're doing this for all your students.
Yeah, so we have about 1,600 undergraduate students. So relatively small.
Okay. So that's nice, though, to be on a small campus like that. Because then you can create those opportunities. Like, you wouldn't have an opportunity like that for a large school, necessarily. Not for all your students.
Right. So Cornell is trying to do something very similar to what we've been doing for years.
Oh, wow.
And they, to be clear, we've been doing it for years. They're starting it this year. Mm-hmm. And they just received a $50 million grant to get it started. So we're all kind of jealous, sitting in our little offices, thinking we've been doing it for years, and they're getting all the money to do it.
Whoa!
Well, you know, that's how it works sometimes. Right?
Absolutely. So we're all just a little bit bitter, but still excited because we think we have a really good model.
Yeah. Well, people want to what was it? I'm lumbling my words because it's late at night and I just want to go to sleep. Imitation is the best form of flattery was the cliche I was going for.
Right.
So that's good, at least that's being adapted. That's really awesome. Yeah. So are students, when they get to the 300 level, can they like travel if they want? Like, or are they kind of, I don't want to say stuck, but are they required to do this kind of on campus / in the surrounding community, or are they like traveling across the world?
So for the 300 level, I taught a course this year called Poverty and Policy, and we tried to change policy at the state and federal level. So I took some students to Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, to lobby, and some down to Washington, D.C. One of the courses is a fair trade course. So they go to Guatemala, and they kind of study fair trade issues in Guatemala, and then they come back, and they go down to D.C., and they advocate on behalf of fair trade issues. We have a course that partners with Catholic Relief Services that also goes to Guatemala, but in a separate place, and then comes back and lobbies in D.C. On international relief efforts. So they do get a lot of them get to travel. Some don't, not 100% of them.
Yeah.
But yeah.
That's so really cool. Those are sweet opportunities.
Indeed, really? They are.
I'm jealous. I can't say I didn't have those opportunities, but not. They weren't required. Are they required? You said they're required for your students?
They're required to find one. I mean, they could find a course that never leaves the campus, but many of them try not to. So
yeah, we have that a course makes sense.
We have a course that goes down and helps on the border between Arizona and Mexico that then comes back and again does more lobbying. There's a lot of lobbying that goes along with
it. Is there something outside of lobbying that's happening?
Well, and actually we have that continuing conversation because we get too lost in lobbying sometimes. We're like, mm-hmm. Oh, that's just a great way to change the world. And then our students want to do other things and we say, oh yeah, we need to find your other place in the world.
Right. Our students, you know, like if I say like, I actually want to go to, I don't know, Spain because there's an issue that I want to deal with in Spain. Like, can I do that as a student, or am I kind of limited to those courses?
We're trying to roll that out this year. So we have a few students that we're going to set that up for and see how well it works.
Okay. Yeah. As long as they come back and lobby, we're cool.
Absolutely. That's really what it requires.
That's it. That's the only requirement. You have to come back and lobby. Do whatever you want. Just come back and lobby.
So here's a random question. Like, how does your office report? Like, through what areas does it report? Is it from an academic area? Is it from a student affairs kind of area? Is it its own thing that's coming from like a special initiative or something like that?
Yeah, we're in academic affairs, which is totally different from most other offices like ours. All my colleagues in the same kind of world are usually in student life, student affairs, and we're in academic affairs. And the reason is that we actually got started as our own independent office. We were a mission-based office.
Right.
And then once we decided that college mission shouldn't belong to a vice president of mission, it should belong to the whole campus, we decided that kind of office went away and our office went into academic affairs because we support the academic side of what we do. It ties into the mission.
We have an office of service learning. So it reports up through academics. And that's what I was curious about because yours has such a different kind of flair to it compared to just a regular service learning office. Because it's really a lot about, you know, civil engagement, obviously. And that's something that we don't do for sure. I mean, we go out in the community, we help people, we do that kind of stuff. But you guys really, you really get out there and push things. I hate calling it lobbying because it's such a dirty word these days, but you know, it's pretty cool. Like what kind of causes do you guys push? Like are there any specific things that you guys are lobbying for?
Sure. And let me start by saying that I was a lobbyist before I started this work. down in DC. I was a tax lobbyist. So it does have a dirty connotation. Actually, I just read today that for every member of Congress, there are 20 registered lobbyists.
Hey, some of my best friends are lobbyists. Like literally they are. I have two of them.
And lobbying is so important. But it does have that dirty word, because it sounds like a dirty word, because, so I hope it doesn't mess up your clean rating, because it,
not like that.
Sympathy laugh. But it's such an important part of what we do. And I think a lot of people don't realize that lobbying actually does educate the people who make decisions. It actually does change the world.
Depending on the lobbyist.
So that's absolutely true. And depending on the representatives they're working with.
It's like not all super PACs are bad, just the ones just that aren't. Yeah, I know.
Just the ones with real money.
Right.
So I lobbied in my before I came, I lobbied for the nonprofit sector doing tax law. We were not funded the same way that the super PACs that are funding changing the tax laws for corporations were funded.
So when I'm watching the president movie with Michael Douglas, you're like the nice girl lady side of things, not the right. Yeah, okay.
Right. And you remember how everybody was like, it was Sydney, right?
Sydney.
And everyone was like, oh, Sydney's so cute, but you know, she's not really doing anything. Like, that's sometimes how we were. It was like, oh, you know, Tom's so cute, we're glad he's bringing us the information, but at the end of the day,
you're not giving me money. You're just talking to me. Yeah.
You know, they do. I've been to several of those events where they'll have, and we never hosted them, but literally they'll do a breakfast, and you can pay so much money according to the lobbying laws if you host a breakfast event, if there's food being served. So all the lobbyists and all of the people who are working in that corporation or that area will show up to the breakfast, which is literally like a donut, and they each hand over their $250 checks to the congressman. And now, in the course of a breakfast, they've gotten around the lobbying laws and they've collected $10,000 for a campaign, all in exchange for a donut.
Wow, that's a donuts crazy donut. Tasty.
Not worth $250, though. That'd be a good donut.
Yeah. Did you, get super fat as a lobbyist also? Because, if I was eating donuts that often,
Oh, luckily, it was only one donut. They never had two.
Oh, you didn't have more than one donut.
It was like a
plain. Because that'd be like $500.
That is true.
You want two donuts, got to work for it.
Right? Extra $100 for a cup of coffee.
Wow. Quite an expensive breakfast. But everybody finds a loophole.
Bless me.
I don't know who that was.
Anyway.
I couldn't see. I don't have video.
You can't see me.
No, I didn't know who sneezed. I just heard a sneeze.
That was me.
Oh. Bless you, Logan. I hope you sneezed effectively. Anyway, that's really cool for your students. So is this every semester, your students are doing this type of stuff, or is it only in the fall or spring?
Every semester. They can take it whenever they... 100 in the first year, 200 in the second year, 300 in the third. Nice.
Cool.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
And it's all tied to our college has a social justice mission. So it's all tied to our theory of social justice.
That makes sense. How long has this program been going on? Do you know?
So in its current incarnation, it started in 2007. But we were one of the first colleges to really implement a service learning curriculum as part of the core curriculum. And that was in 1989. And we tracked back service learning to the founding of our college in 1958.
Wow.
So nice. We're very proud of it.
Like the evolution. That's really cool.
We're a little uppity about it, I have to admit.
I think we do it better than
anyone else.
I mean, you've been doing it for so long that it kind of makes sense.
Right.
You're allowed.
Service learning has been a big component of Belmont's core curriculum for a while. We have, when students come in during Welcome Week, that's one of the things that we're ramping up for. They do a thing called Serve, where they go out and do some service kinds of things around the city, like the entire freshman class and the transfers. So that's always fun and cool. But they definitely integrated into the curriculum. I know, maybe not as specifically as you guys. It's more up to the professor, I think. But it's cool stuff.
So we actually used to do a day of service at the very beginning of the semester. first day where all the freshmen will go. And this is where, in some ways, we've become some, I think some colleges, and we sometimes are guilty of it, become too much of social justice warriors as opposed to, you know, the service side of it.
Right.
So we killed it. We killed that idea because we found that some students weren't necessarily ready to be in the community. They didn't know how to process what they were seeing.
Right.
And sometimes they were doing more harm than good to the community. They would, they would be, you know, we clean up the park, but two students who are laughing at a homeless person who lives there can be more detrimental than the clean park.
Right.
And we saw those things happening because, you know, 18-year-olds are dumb.
Really?
Well, but well, that is a good point. I never thought about that. We had that at my alma mater, where, you know, it was a day of service for first year students. And when I was there, it was just kind of like in its beginning trial stages. So it wasn't something that was really well known. It was kind of more of an optional thing that you could participate in. But I never thought about that, you know, like how you can actually negatively affect your community. And it's kind of scary because then it's the representation of the school that's on the line too.
Right. I know, right?
With these 18-year-olds that may make poor choices.
Because, you know, or we send them out in Belmont t-shirts or Cabrini t-shirts or SUNY t-shirts, and like all of a sudden they're the representation of the school.
Right.
And then people are like, oh, that
We can't do that again. Yeah. And that's so hard, you know, because one negative experience can outweigh a lot, you know, 10 good experiences with us, with any school or, you know, any person. That's interesting. I never thought about that.
Hmm. Yeah. We haven't had any issues as far as I've heard, but
that's good.
It's good. I don't know that we ever did. I just think it became one of those like theoretical conversations of we should be really careful, and then it got killed. And
we beyond that serve thing, the only big like community service thing that we require as part of the like core of you know, general education is we have a convocation program where students go and get like to go to academic lectures or faith development kinds of things, and community service is a big chunk of that. So they have to go out and get community service hours from folks. So,
Tom, do your students have a community service requirement as well, or is this kind of this civic engagement thing kind of?
So this was meant to take it over, and we again. You know, with some of our social justice warriors, we have faculty members who specifically will say we shouldn't count hours because then it teaches a different idea of what they should be doing and what is volunteerism and are they just counting. But unfortunately, I think by moving to this model, we haven't continued to encourage service the way we should be.
Right.
So our students are much more likely to, for instance, go lobby in Harrisburg to change the laws. So this big social justice area, but they forget that there are still people who are hungry tonight.
Right.
We still need to go feed them. So my big goal, one of my big goals in continuing and growing our social justice work is to keep the conversation also at a service level of we can't just get rid of the poor by letting them die. We have to take care of the ones who are poor now and the ones who will be poor tomorrow. And those are two different issues. The U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops has the 2 feet of social of service and social justice, where with each step you have to walk with charity and with social justice.
Right.
So we kind of, I think that model we haven't really followed much.
Yeah.
Well, we also do another thing on our side of things. We have where the students go out in the fall and do a service day. Faculty and staff go out in the spring and do a service day as well. And this year we went to a food bank and packed food the entire day, which was fun. And kind of the idea behind that is, you know, if we're gonna teach students that, you know, serving the community is important, we need to do it too, right? As a faculty and staff and administration. Mm-hmm. So I actually organized that one this year, and it was pretty good. Pretty awesome. Felt really nice.
Say so yourself.
Huh?
Well, I think my program was pretty amazing. No, but that's really cool.
We had more people than the year before volunteer, so that's a plus, right?
Yeah, totally. How many years have you guys been doing it?
Two.
Oh, well, there you go.
Good job.
Yeah.
That's great.
Next year's three.
Yeah. That's like one major goal is to increase attendance, especially from year one to year two, because that means you're retaining and pulling in new interests. That's awesome.
Exactly right.
That's great. Oh, man, I miss those types of big group service things. That was something I organized back in college, was our first ever like large day of service on campus. And it incorporated...
Well, aren't we all service people?
Well, let me transition. Watch the transition happen. Follow along, folks. So the reason why I planned this day of service was because I was in an organization, I am still, in an organization called Alpha Phi Omega, which Tom is also a part of. And my chapter of Alpha Phi Omega, we plan this service day to invite not only, you know, everyone on campus, even if they wanted to represent their own organization or just, you know, as a student, but we also invited other chapters of Alpha Phi Omega that were local to come to this event. And like, in my first year, I was blown away by the support and the number of people on our campus and other campuses that showed up, and it got even bigger in the second and third year. So high five, Logan, for making increased numbers at service events.
Yes, that's how it should be, because if there's anything that I think university should be, it's a resource for the community. A lot of times universities can lock themselves behind, you know, their pearly white walls and columns and such. And I think that universities, even like universities that we're not a research university or anything like that, there are ways that we can contribute to the community and to society that people don't necessarily expect. And that's why it makes me happy that I work at a place where stuff like that happens, you know?
Mm-hmm. It's good. Very cool.
And it's nice to have someone from a Christian university here, too. I just want to say that. not because we're a special, like, you know, fraternity or anything, but I think it's cool. Faith-based universities have some interesting positives that a lot of people don't really think about.
So I love two things about a faith-based university. And I think one is about all faith-based universities, which is their mission is usually a lot deeper than just a higher education mission that most public universities have. Right. Public schools are educating for a great purpose, which is education and research and all the things that come along with it. But faith-based universities will have a deeper mission that often specifically talks about moral development. So at ours, we always talk about an education of the heart, which links your education to moral development, which is just a really important piece of faith-based universities. The second thing I love, though, about my college specifically is the nuns. We have nuns.
So the nuns.
That wasn't, like, I was not expecting that at all. I don't know what I was expecting, but that was definitely not what I was expecting.
They're amazing. They're just wonderful women who are so committed to this work that we do. And it's really inspirational to get to see them because they're living such a deep call. So that's pretty cool about a faith-based university. Ours specifically.
You're from Baltimore?
I'm from Baltimore.
So when did you live in Baltimore? When did you graduate high school?
I graduated in 2000.
Oh, 2000. So you were there when the whole Adnan thing was happening.
The what?
Adnan, you know, Syed,
like,
you know,
cereal,
you know, maybe.
Yes, sorry, cereal. Got it.
Cereal, yes, yes. It happened in 1999 in Baltimore.
Which, to be clear, was not really a thing in Baltimore at the time.
Really?
I mean, it was, but like what Serial did for it, what this one podcast thing did for it, was to bring it to public attention in a way that it wasn't in Baltimore when it should have been in the late 90s.
Hmm.
Right. And that's what they kept saying on the show, was that... Right.
Like, we heard about it in the news. We like saw it in the newspaper, but it wasn't... People weren't following it. People weren't
obsessing about it and making podcasts about podcasts.
Correct.
Well, there is a podcast now. I'll have to look it up. I want to say it's called Undisclosed, but I could be lying, where it's a bunch of like lawyers and different people that made a podcast about Serial and about the story. But they're like, they start the whole thing being like, we're not trying to make a podcast. It's just an easy way for us to get out this information. So it's not a very nicely produced podcast, but it's really interesting because they're like analyzing all the plot holes and like how this really would work out because it's been so much time and like things you can't remember. And it's interesting.
But what I think the podcast did, unfortunately, what Serial did, and I could be wrong, but I feel like it made people they did so well with it as a story that it made people forget that it's a real issue. This is a real person, that this is the real criminal justice system. Like, mm-hmm. I think people watched it and thought about it like they thought about The Wire. Like, it was this made-up thing that was really cool and told a story.
That is just, like, a crazy story. Like, oh, my gosh, you have to listen to Serial. It's, like, such an insane story. That is true. That is a really good point. Because there were times, I mean, I listened to the whole thing, that, like, you have to think about, like, wow, Adnan is alive right now and literally sitting in jail. Well, is he still sitting in jail? I know that there was, like,
another trial. Jail, but there's a thing. So what's interesting, and I heard about this, I think, on the Nerdist, like it was on their Corkboard, that podcast. There's another podcast called, and I could be wrong, called the Black Tapes Podcast, that is kind of like Serial, except completely fake.
Interesting. See, now that to me, it's hard because as a lawyer, like I listened to Serial and I was like, this is fascinating from both just a human perspective, but also from a legal perspective. And I kind of would like to know now, like, I feel like the Black Tapes would be fun because I would be able to forget that there's someone.
Right. There's no one.
I could be wrong. Cause I'm here looking, I'm trying to remember what it was. It may not have been that one. I know I've heard of the Black Tapes because I've heard it's pretty interesting, but
I just Googled it and these all seem to be like paranormal.
Yeah.
Which I'm okay with.
Oh. Are they real?
No, I don't think it's real.
The opening of it says the Black Tapes Podcast. Do you believe?
Ooh. Eerie.
So I'm gonna go with generally no.
Probably not.
Right.
We never know. People have like accounts of paranormal activity. That freaks me out.
Right, like the Blair Witch Project.
Yep.
Which was totally real until it wasn't.
Totally real. With all that live footage. Shake, 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 shake.
And just a terrible movie.
Well, according to the Reddit, okay?
Reddit according podcast, to Reddit.
It says...
unimpeachable.
Any podcast like Serial but fictional. And one of the top comment for this is just listen to a new one this week. It's called the Black Tapes Podcast. It's almost like a Serial spoof but based on a paranormal event.
Huh.
So maybe it is the one that I'm thinking about. That is actually it.
I will be listening to it on the way to work tomorrow.
The Black Tapes Podcast was created to be Serial meets X-Files, about a paranormal investigator with a mysterious past who doesn't believe in the paranormal. I'm one of the producers, so I would love to... Okay. Yep, that's it.
Huh.
So...
Interesting.
We'll have a link to that in the...
We definitely will.
Stuff. I want to listen to it too now because I'm kind of interested.
Yeah. Huh. A new podcast to listen to. You're welcome, guys, for all the publicity. You know.
I don't know. Being on the Nerdist.
I know you're listening.
A little bit more than us, but hey.
We have at least 10 listeners. So.
No, we got at least 50.
At least 50.
At least 50. Wow.
And now Tom downloaded all of our. When I invited Tom to the show, Tom downloaded and listened to all of our shows. So we have at least 51.
So what do you think? We didn't bore you to death, obviously. Or did you just not listen to all of them? You just downloaded them all.
You only listened to one of them. It's fine.
I've listened to the majority of them. It's only been like a week and a half. I did not have time to listen to them. Yeah,
there are a good chunk of them, and they're pretty long.
Yeah, of varying lengths.
Mm-hmm. We try to keep it within a half hour to 40 minutes. Sometimes things go long and interesting.
We've only had one episode that's been under 30 minutes, so there's that too.
Well, yeah. And that was my pancake thing that Logan won't let me forget.
And the first episode.
Right.
Or episode zero. Not really our first episode.
Our fake episode.
It was 24 minutes long.
Go listen to that, listeners, if you haven't listened to it yet. It's hilarious.
We have no idea what the hell we're doing.
Nope. But we learned, kind
Did
of.
Did we?
I don't know, we're doing better. But with that, it looks like we're at the end of this show.
Can I say something before you end the show?
Sure. Yes.
It's so awkward now, like I interrupted this. So the one thing I noticed is that because I've listened to the first, I think, 18 of them in the course of a week and some change,
Yes.
I could see improvement from the first to the last. Like, it wasn't like, oh, I'm listening to them every other week, or, you know, I'm just catching up on them. I was like, wow, they get so much.
They do get better. They do get better.
I don't mean that in a bad way. It occurred to me after I put the thought out there that it didn't sound.
No, it's fine. I will agree. I feel better doing them, because a lot of the times in the beginning it was a little bit shaky.
It's because we didn't know what we were doing.
Nope.
I mean, we do. From a technical standpoint, we knew what we were doing. It's just, how do we talk to people?
Well, so with that.
With that, that's all the time we have this week.
Not interrupting.
It is. Womp womp. But it was a great show. Thanks, Tom, for being on the show.
Thank you.
We appreciate it, even though your sleeping child is upstairs.
Yeah, this is the only time I can get anything done, so.
Your most productive time. Well, thanks again, Tom, again, for being on the show. We appreciate it. And for listening to the show. If you're like Tom and wanted to download all of our episodes, you certainly can. We're on iTunes. So you can subscribe to us on our website, higher ed.social. You can also tweet at us. We are at HES Podcast, and we want you on the show. I had to convince Tom to do it like last minute, so all of those things. So please tweet at us. Let us know how we're doing, what we should improve on, or what we should talk about, or if you want to be on the show. Bye.